Yeah, so I welcome all of you for Wednesday Sutta discussion session. So in this session we are trying to go through few suttas where we can get some advice, we can get some guidance from Buddha's teaching so that we can incorporate that to our practice. So accordingly we have discussed Sabbasava Sutta, which actually deals with some deep aspects of the Buddha's teaching. And again, now we are going through Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, that is also very, very relevant to our practice. And both suttas are actually available in Majjhima Nikaya. So if I get into the topic directly, so Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta is in the third book of Majjhima Nikaya and deals with fairly on the elements. So as you know, we typically think that there is a person, there is an individual, there is a woman, there is a man. So likewise, we typically trapped in the conventional reality, conceptual thinking. So Buddha gives us an entirely different perspective, and in this sutta, Buddha comes up with several such different definitions. So, in a way, it's a kind of an invitation for us to look into ourselves and to see whether this Buddha's alternative explanations are they correct. So, the first explanation is Buddha telling that this so-called person consists of six elements. And then he called this so-called person consists of six bases of contact. And then 18 kinds of mental exploration. And actually these three are quite, in a way, neutral explanations, or which is common to everyone. But the other few has four foundations are relevant to the practice. So when one get into the practice, then Buddha is giving kind of an explanation, kind of a definition, how such a person can be defined in a way. How such a person's behavior of the mind can be interpreted. So that is another explanation. So number 5 and number 6 are also related to those practitioner who is now going through some vipassana practice, and as a result how his mind behaves and how he has to further cultivate his mind, restrain his mind. So that is actually mentioned in number 5 and 6, so we'll get into them later. And so far we were discussing number 1, 2, 3 and number 4. So if I just quickly run up the thing, so there are 6 elements. Typically we can recognize 4 elements, which is more common, known to many. So Buddha tells that this physical body consists of earth element, water element, fire element, air element. So those are the physical aspects, and this sutta, space element is also added. So that all together we can say is the physical component. And then the consciousness element, so that is the mental aspect of any living being. So that is also included, and all together these 6 elements are explained. And then Buddha gives another explanation, that is 6 bases of contact. So we know that as human beings, as any, and consider various other beings, so we have various sensors in order to deal with the outside world. We have eyes in order to deal with forms. We have ears in order to sense sounds. We have nose in order to sense various odors. And then tongue for the taste, body for various tactile sensations, and the when it comes to the mental world, we have the mind which deals with the various mental objects. So in that way we can analyze the so-called person. In the other sense, we can see that Buddha is simplifying the whole experience. So when we are putting so much labels, so much perception, so much concepts, then the whole thing becomes very complicated. But on the other hand, when Buddha is analyzing in this way, this kind of a simplified view, so our mind somewhat disentangle, rather than become confused, rather than become too much burdened with too much information. then Buddha's this kind of explanation help us to clearly see our whole experience in a different perspective. So this is the second explanation. And then Buddha get into the third explanation, that is related to how our mind behaves. So when we see a form through eyes, so we are looking for something pleasant, or we may be looking for something unpleasant, or we may be searching or investigating certain aspects, they are actually leading to some equanimous feeling. So depending on that feeling tone, we may be doing various, we may be using our mind to explore various details, and that is with respect to the eye. Similarly to the sounds, when we hear something, we may be looking to more details, looking to more subtle aspects of that particular sound in order to get some joy. Sometimes in order to get, even unknowingly, in order to get sorrow. We may hear something carefully, but it is producing some sorrow, some kind of a regret. But still the mind interested in that. So mind is constantly being kept there, attentively listening, and we are trying to search here properly. Similarly, suppose we are listening to a Dhamma sermon, maybe to a lecture or something like that, which neither produce much joy, neither produce sorrow, but kind of a neutral feeling. But if we are attentively listening, so that is where our mind is behaving, being explored. So likewise, we can consider tongue, nose, body, and the mind itself. So we can understand, so this kind of behavior of the mind is very common to all the beings. So as a result, Buddha is giving this explanation. So when we consider any kind of a being, especially when with respect to the mental aspect, so his mind explores various details, which is productive of either pleasant feeling, either that is joy, or any kind of sorrow, grief, or kind of an equanimous feeling. So this is the other explanation Buddha giving in this sutta. And now actually Buddha is coming to the fourth explanation, that is where the practice is involved. So there Buddha is telling that this so-called person has four foundations. So those four foundations are different from the typical satipatthana, typical mindfulness foundation, four foundations of mindfulness, but this is entirely different four foundations. So we can say they are four resolves in a way. So first one, the foundation of wisdom, then the foundation of truth, foundation of relinquishment, and the last, foundation of peace. So now we are going one by one of these four foundations. So the number one, the wisdom foundation. So there are one aspect is that one should not neglect wisdom. In other words, one has to work hard, one has to practice diligently in order to acquire this wisdom. So this is what we need to understand. So this wisdom is entirely different from typical worldly kind of knowledge. Now we have so many universities, so many libraries, and even in the internet, so much of information is available, and we can access them. We can go to a university and learn them. And as a result, we become experts in a particular subject, a particular area. So this kind of an external knowledge is not something that here Buddha is meaning. What meant here is sort of experiential wisdom. So how one is refining one's faculties, developing certain necessary skills, and using them, how one can acquire, or how one can experience, how one can claim this meditative knowledge or meditative wisdom. So this is what Buddha emphasized here. So there are, with respect to the wisdom, so there are some information. So in the wisdom, so Buddha is telling that one should understand six elements. So it started with earth element. So we already discussed. So what is earth element? So basically, first Buddha is giving a kind of a rough idea about how our body consists of various earth element components like head hair, body hair, nails, etc. so that we can understand. And then in order to incorporate this to our practice, we have to recognize the presence of earth element with its characteristics, that is hardness, roughness, heaviness, softness, smoothness, lightness. So whenever we feel or whenever we experience these characteristics, then we can understand, okay, the presence of earth element. Earth element is there. Say if you are touching your hand, you can feel some softness, so you can feel some hardness. So there you can understand this is the presence of earth element. Suppose you are keeping your body on a chair, say you are sitting, then you can feel the weight of your body, upper half of your body. So that's this weight actually is because of the earth element. It actually does not mean that the body, whatever these components, doesn't have the other three elements. This is a kind of an accumulation of all elements. But when we consider these 20 components or these 20 parts, the majority is earth element. So therefore Buddha is giving a rough idea so that we can understand the body consists of various elements or various components, various parts. It is not a single component, it is not a one unit. Rather, it's a combination of so many parts. Like a vehicle, say if you consider a car, car has four wheels, axles, engine, maybe carburetor, and all so many stuff are there. So altogether we call it a car. Similarly, our body consists of so much parts, and altogether we call it a body. A human body, an animal body. So likewise we give a name. But when we go a little deeper using our yoniso manasikara, so then we can understand this is a kind of an accumulation. So when one develops insight using this kind of reflections, and especially when using dhatu manasikara, where through one's own experience, when one understands the presence of earth element, water element, fire element, and air element, then the kind of insights are possible. That one will understand this whole body consists of these elements. There is no person, there is no I, there is no an individual. Rather, it's a sort of accumulation of elements. An internal earth element and the external earth element are merely earth element. Internal water element and the external water element are merely water element. Internal fire element and external fire element are merely fire element. Internal air element and external air element are merely air element. So there is no any difference. So this boundary starts to fade away. So ultimately we have a kind of a encompassing view, kind of a holistic kind of view, where the significance that we have given to our own type of body is sort of now diluted, and what we have is a kind of a holistic view where every physical component is nothing but elements, so there is nothing to grasp, nothing to hold so strongly. So likewise the kind of attachment we have, strong grasping we had, is now going to reduce. So as a result, disenchantment going to improve, and we become somewhat dispassionate about the whole experience, about these elements. So this is common to earth element and water element, fire element, air element, and space element. Actually, space element we typically don't take in dhatu manasikara because it's bit difficult to perceive, to experience. So therefore we typically take four elements, therefore it is called as four element meditation. So in four element meditation, therefore this insights are possible. So one's compactness, the view of compactness, going to be broken, because you know when we consider there is I, when we consider there is a man, there is a woman, there is father, there is mother, there is husband, there is daughter, there is son. So likewise, when we are somewhat trapped in this conventional reality, so that is producing a lot of defilements. But on the other hand, when we understand the whole physical world is nothing but four elements, so then very easily one can cultivate one's mind, reduce one's grasp, reduce one's clinging, so that mind become free. So this is therefore very productive for wisdom. So actually Dhatu Manasikara, the four element meditation, is more oriented towards wisdom. So the product or the ultimate result is mostly the wisdom aspect. Now we can get into the consciousness element. So that is in a way somewhat deep. So consciousness element here is Buddha explaining with respect to how it behaves or what is the function of consciousness. So you know, we have different explanations related to the consciousness, like eye consciousness, ear consciousness, tongue consciousness, nose consciousness, body consciousness, and mind consciousness. That is another explanation telling that six consciousness types are available. So in this sutta, Buddha is taking a different approach where he is giving emphasis to the function, to the task of the consciousness. So he is asking, what does one cognize with consciousness? So this is one important aspect of consciousness. So consciousness is capable of distinctly recognizing various feeling tones. Whenever we encounter joy, because of consciousness, that ability, that function of consciousness, one is capable of distinctly recognizing, okay, this is joy, this is pleasant feeling, this is a pleasurable feeling. On the other hand, when there is a painful feeling, again one can recognize, okay, this is a painful feeling. When there is neither pleasant nor pain type of feeling, that is a neutral feeling, one still can understand this is a neither painful nor pleasant feeling. So this distinction, to distinguish between many various components, many various feelings, so this capability is a function of the consciousness. So one function of consciousness is to recognize distinctly these differences. So therefore, this feeling is actually being taken for vipassana. So if I take you to the Satipatthana Sutta, you can now remember Vedana Anupassana. So the feeling is the main object, or feeling is the primary object. One develops some concentration, suppose using Anapanasati or maybe rising and falling, whatever various techniques, one can develop necessary amount of concentration, and that concentration can be focused onto any place where any kind of feeling is possible, feeling is available. So as a result of this observation, one will understand, okay, there is pleasurable feeling, there is pleasant feeling, there is painful feeling, there is neutral feeling. So likewise, now one is observing it again and again. It is not just one observation is enough. It has to be cultivated, it has to be practiced again and again. Whenever body encounter any type of feeling, one now observes that feeling mindfully. So keeps one's attention there, and then one can recognize, okay, this is a pleasurable feeling, this is a painful feeling, this is a neutral feeling. So what happens as a result of this observation? So more and more our clear comprehension improves, our ability to see clearly improves, then one will understand it is not a single pain, it is not a single pleasurable feeling, it is not a single neutral feeling, it's a kind of a combination of so many little or minute feelings. Altogether, they produce kind of a resultant feeling. That is what we typically experience. But if we closely examine the feeling, so it is not a single feeling, but a combination or accumulation of so many feelings. So this is one aspect one will get. So this is in a way one insight we can say. Because typically we had a kind of a notion of I am suffering, I am happy, I am feeling bored. So this kind of notion is there with us. But now when one is cultivating Vedananupassana, so this notion going to fade away. So rather than thinking I am suffering, so one will recognize there is a painful feeling. So now this painful feeling is looked at objectively. So this is quite important. So throughout Buddha's teaching, especially in Vipassana practice, so all these phenomena are looked at with proper respect, look at with proper perspective, rather than considering them me or mine or myself, but they are kept in their proper place. Feeling is just feeling. Various elements are merely various elements. Thoughts are merely thoughts. So likewise, we are keeping them in proper perspective. So that is what here also we do. So feelings are arising, so we keep our attention there and we recognize this is a pleasurable feeling, this is a painful feeling, this is a neutral feeling. And then Buddha is taking us to the Patisamuppada, that is the conditionality. So this feeling is not self-arisen. It cannot arise by itself, but rather the conditioning component, conditioning factors, causes should be there. So in order to arise pleasurable feeling, the conditioning contact, passa, has to be there. If we encounter a contact which is conducive of producing pleasurable feeling, then the pleasurable feeling arises. Whenever we encounter a contact which is producing a painful feeling, then the painful feeling arises. When we encounter a contact which is productive of neutral feeling, then the neutral feeling arises. So passa paccaya vedana, this contact conditions the feeling. So this is a very important point here, because it is important to understand this conditionality. So for a yogi, I mean, understanding conditionality through the mind is a bit difficult, because Chittanupassana is a little challenging for a beginner. Because once you try to look at the mind, you get caught by the various thoughts, various emotions, various moods. But on the other hand, when one look at the body, when one look at various feelings, so this understanding of conditionality would be a little easier. Now this is what Buddha is telling in this sutta. So when consciousness is capable of understanding various feeling tones, now Buddha asks us to see the causes. So how these various feelings are arising. So now actually we have to examine each and every feeling very closely. Then only we would be able to understand the beginning of the feeling. Now we are keeping our attention very precisely onto each and every minute feeling, and probably we would be able to understand contact is conditioning this feeling. Now, on the other hand, I mean, it is not that difficult to understand. Suppose you are doing walking meditation, so there your foot is touching the ground. Mostly it's a neutral feeling. So when only your foot touches the ground, when it is contact is present, then the neutral feeling arises. So contact causes neutral feeling. Likewise, if you are keeping one hand on top of the other, so then there is a kind of a heat produced. So it may be a neutral feeling. So this contact is necessary in order to produce this heat. So similarly, wherever we encounter any type of feeling, we can understand, okay, this contact is one important aspect, one important cause in order to produce these feelings. Now, Buddha is giving a easy example here, easy simile here. So he's telling, if one rubs two sticks, say two fire sticks, so if one is rubbing both of them, then the kind of a heat being generated. Now, even in good old days, there were no lighters or any match boxes. So what they had is this type of a very basic type of mechanism to produce fire. So what they had was two fire sticks. Those are dry, and they rub each other. So as a result, because of this continuous rubbing, there is a little heat going to generate. Now Buddha is giving this example here. So when this rubbing stopped, so the generated heat now going to dissipate to the environment. As a result, its heat going to subside. Now it is cooling down. Now you can understand this generated heat actually is conditioned by this rubbing, by this contact. So Buddha says similarly, whenever there is contact which is productive of pressure, then the pleasurable feeling arises. Whenever a contact productive of pain, then a painful feeling arises. Whenever a contact presence which is productive of neutral feeling, then the neutral feelings arise. So likewise, if we can understand very carefully this idappacceta, this conditionality, this causes that. So that is quite important, because understanding this conditionality, dependent origination, is one important teaching of the Buddha. On the other hand, we can say his whole teaching is sort of emphasizing this conditionality, emphasizing this cause and effect relationship. So this cause and effect relationship is very nicely sort of summarized, given as a theory, as a rule. When this exists, that comes to be. With the arising of this, that arises. So we can apply this to the feeling. When contact exists, feeling comes to be. When contact is arising, feeling also arises. So we can apply this rule, this theory, to any kind of such conditioned phenomena. So again, Buddha says, when this does not exist, that does not come to be, and with the cessation of this, that ceases. If we apply this to contact and feeling, we can say, when contact does not exist, feeling does not come to be, and with the cessation of contact, feeling arises or feeling ceases. So likewise, we can apply this rule to two phenomena which are interdependent, or are not really interdependent, they are dependent. So dependent on contact, feeling arises. So we can apply this rule there. So likewise, you can remember the very common Paticca Samuppada series: avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnanam, vijnana paccaya namarupam, namarupaccaya salayatanam, salayatana paccaya passo, passa paccaya vedana. So we are in that passa paccaya vedana, where the contact conditions feeling. Now this understanding is quite important. Actually, spending some time to understand this conditionality using Vedanupassana is one important aspect, because they are the they are still the physical or the mind observe some physical aspect, because this painful feeling is could be available in the body. So then one can understand through the mind, through the concentrated mind, how this pain arises. These pleasurable feelings are available in the body. So one can keep one's attention carefully on that pleasurable feeling and try to understand what is the causing contact. Similarly, when there is a neutral feeling, one can keep one's attention there and can try to understand the causes. Now, on the other hand, if one is capable of looking at one's mind, so the various other such conditionality going to be revealed. Say, for example, how feeling can produce craving. Now, feeling, if it is a pleasurable feeling, there could be a kind of a desire arising to that, kind of a craving going to arise that. So the feeling could be a physical feeling, which is available in the body, but the craving is in a mental aspect, in the mental side. So now, Actually, one has to direct one's attention first to the body, and then one can recognize how the mind changes. So both are involved. But on the other hand, if we come to contact causes feeling, so one can try to understand both aspects in the physical body. So likewise, these conditionality can be recognized using the body and using the mind. When it comes to Vedanupassana, so Buddha is giving various similes with respect to Vedanupassana and with respect to feelings. Another beautiful simile is available in Pena Pindupama Sutta, which is in Kanda Samyutta. So Buddha is talking about various aggregates. So what is the simile for form? What is the simile for feelings? What is the simile for perceptions? What is the simile for sankhara, formations? And what is the simile for consciousness? Actually, very beautiful sutta, Pena Pindupama Sutta. So there Buddha is giving very powerful similes for each and every aggregate, each and every khanda. Now the simile given for feeling, that is the Vedana khanda, is a kind of a water bubble. So he is telling when there's a kind of a raining happens on a, and various big drops, raindrops are falling on top of water, then kind of a water bubble arise. Assume now if we start with a single water drop, raindrop, so as a result of that raindrop, there's a water bubble arise and then it burst. Then there's another raindrop, as a result, a water bubble arise and then it is burst. Now likewise, if we consider a raining, so at that time, so many such water bubbles being generated and then immediately it burst, they burst. So Buddha say, now this is quite similar to how feelings arise and how feelings behave. Now another point that Buddha highlight here is, when a man look at this, how these various water bubbles are arising and then bursting, then he'll understand there is nothing there. All are merely water bubbles. There is no core in the water bubble. There is no something significant in the water bubble. There is no something substantial in the water bubble. It's merely a water bubble. Similarly, if he is taking us to the feelings, when one understands so much of feelings accumulated and then it is giving a perspective or a kind of perception of pleasurable feeling, kind of a perception of painful feeling, kind of a perception of neutral feeling. But if we go a little deeper, so much of minute feelings are arising and then bursting, arising and then bursting, arising and then bursting. So this type of picture is there. So like Buddha is explaining in this simile, in the water bubble simile, so such kind of a view, such kind of a picture would be possible if one carefully observes how various feelings are behaving. Now, so these all help us to understand the impermanent nature of feeling. It is not that pleasurable feeling lasts forever. It is not that painful feeling lasts forever. It is not a neutral feeling lasts forever. They are very transient. Various pleasurable feelings actually consists of hundreds of minute pleasurable feelings. Any painful feeling consists of hundreds of little painful feelings or minute painful feelings. Similarly, any neutral feeling consists of minute neutral feelings. Each and every minute feeling is arising and passing away so quickly. So that is, therefore one can understand even the pleasurable feeling is subjected to this kind of a behavior. Even a painful feeling is subjected to this kind of a behavior. neutral feeling is subjected to this kind of a behavior. So how can we expect such transient nature, such impermanent scenario to produce lasting happiness? It is so vulnerable. I mean, expecting lasting happiness from that kind of a transient behavior is impossible. So that is where even the pleasurable feeling becomes kind of unsatisfactory, because it is constantly subjected to this kind of arising and passing away, this kind of transience, this kind of an impermanence. And painful feeling, of course, also subject to this kind of transience. Neutral feeling also subjected to this kind of transience, this kind of an impermanence. So if I take you again to Satipatthana Sutta, now there also Buddha is telling, so he is, one can recognize various feelings internally, and using one's own deductive knowledge, one can understand such similar pattern is available in outside, so therefore one can understand the behavior of feelings externally, and one can understand it internally and externally, and then one drops that boundary. So this body is subjected to this kind of feelings and go through various feelings, and the outside bodies, outside beings, also subjected to the same type of feelings. So there is no big difference. So this body, this so-called person, is also subject to these feelings. Outside persons also subject to these kind of feelings. And again, one will understand how feelings are arising. And again, one will understand how feelings are vanishing, or how feelings are disappearing. And more one is observing closely, one will understand how they are arising and passing away, or how they are arising and vanishing. So as we discussed, so we need actually some clear comprehension in order to see this transient nature. When our mind is well focused and keeping our attention there, then we would be able to recognize this transient nature. How quickly these various feelings are arising and passing away. And as a result, so one's understanding improves. As a result, one's wisdom improves. So that is where the insights are possible. So instead of thinking that I am suffering, one will understand there is suffering. Instead of thinking that I am happy or I am joyful, one will understand there are pleasant feelings or happy feelings or joyful feelings. Instead of feeling that I am bored, one will understand there are neutral feelings. So they are key. I mean, these practices help us to keep feelings in their proper perspective. There are feelings. So these feelings doesn't belong to me. These feelings are conditioned by contact. And due to various contact, the corresponding feelings going to arise. And more one will recognize this. More and more one will observe this. So different insights going to arise. So one is that keeping the feelings at their proper place. Mindfulness that there is feeling is simply established. And now one is further practicing in order to further improve this insight. One actually got sort of a glimpse of an insight. It's a kind of an eye-opening insight. And now one is continuing one's practice in order to further improve this insight. So again and again, this insight becomes so vivid. And as a result, one starts to detach from various feelings. Now one does not going to grasp pleasurable feeling. Now typically, when we are going through any kind of pleasurable feeling, the tendency is to go and grasp it. We want it. I want to have it. I want to keep it for a long time. So this is the kind of attitude arise in our mind. But when one understand the transient nature of various feelings, so this typical attitude going to change. Because one understand even the pleasurable feelings are so vulnerable. Pleasurable feelings are so transient, so impermanent. So expecting that pleasurable feelings to behave the way I want is not possible. It is conditioned by so many other factors. So as a result, there is no point of expecting me to expecting those feelings to behave in a way that I like. So rather, I simply have to allow them to behave as they like, and I simply have to bear certain things. I have to be patient. I have to tolerate the situation. So this kind of insight is going to arise. And as a result, the grasping going to reduce. And one may further practice in order to improve these insights. And when one's grasping reduces, the mind starts to generate kind of a distance between the feelings and the observing mind. Previously, we were observing each and every feeling so closely because otherwise our mind distracts. But as a result of continuous practice, now one understands the proper observation, which is not too much grasping, it is not too much persevering, but rather it's kind of a gentle observation. So one can observe various pleasurable feeling with distance, while keeping a distance. One can observe various painful feelings while maintaining a distance. One can observe neutral feelings while maintaining a little distance. So one's mind disengages from the feelings. So this is a kind of a evolving scenario. So it is not how we started our practice. Our starting of practice is one way. As we continue, it evolves. And ultimately, mind further sort of disengage from various feelings. Now, various kinds of feelings are available. Now, mind can't even recognize whether this is a painful feeling, whether this is a pleasurable feeling, or whether this is a neutral feeling. Because now mind has disengaged from various feelings, but some feeling is there. And even one can't understand where it is. Now previously, suppose we knew it is at our leg, it is at our knee, it is at our head. So likewise, we could give a place, we could name the place. But as our practice refines, then we can't recognize even the place. Then what is available is some kind of an indication. There is some feeling. And even one can't recognize whether it is a neutral or pleasurable or even painful. So this is where the sort of the practice is going to be further and further refined. At this stage, we should not invite any kind of other perceptions, any kind of other labels. Rather, we should allow mind to get refined, mind to get further simplified. Then only the deep insights are possible. Then only the deep understanding is possible. And then only the releasing of mind is possible. So the last statement here, so Buddha says, he abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. Now, as a result of this practice, so mind could release even the feeling. Now there is no any other perception, there is no any other forms, there is no any other mental thoughts in the mind. So mind was focused on feelings, and now after seeing the impermanence, after seeing the transience, unsatisfactoriness, non-governability of feelings, mind simply gives it up. Mind simply lets it go, and mind becomes free. And not grasping anything in the world, mind can be completely free. So this freedom is something possible through Vedananupassana. So if one continuously practice, so gradually, so the mind starts to disengage from this various feelings and start to make a distance, it becomes kind of a distance observation, disengaged observation, and the minute detail going to disappear, and now one can't recognize whether this is pleasurable, painful, or neutral, and one can't recognize the exact place, But some indication is there is a feeling, and that feeling is very transient. It's constantly arising and passing away. And when one comes to kind of the culmination of this understanding, the mind starts to let go the whole thing. Mind starts to give up the whole thing, and mind can become independent. So this is where Buddha is taking us in the Vedananupassana. So with that note, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching. And if there are any questions, so I'll open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And for anyone that is new to this class, you can feel free to ask your questions via the chat or raise your hands to ask your questions directly. Bhante, I have one question so far.
Yeah.
The question is, dear Bhante, if consciousness is an element, does this mean that it is materiality and not mentality?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. And even though we call the sort of even these six elements, so don't expect those to be entirely physical. Now, so six elements: earth element, water element, fire element, air element, space element, and consciousness element. And you may think that all these, at least the four elements, are sort of physical, and the space element also could be physical. And therefore, now the question is, consciousness element is also going to be physical. Actually, this, even the earth, water, fire, air, space, we can't say they are entirely physical, because there is an energy aspect of whole physical world. Like in the Einstein's equation, is equals to mc squared. So there's a kind of a relationship in the recent science they have found. So therefore, it is impossible to say that the whole elements are physical, but rather this is how we are sort of experiencing it. So don't expect the earth element to be sort of particles. Don't expect water to be particles. Don't expect fire element to be particles. Don't expect air element or space element to be particles. I mean, if we think that all these are particles, then we are sort of trapped in one extreme. And on the other hand, if we think, okay, everything is mind-made, so then we are again trapped in another extreme. So rather than that, we can simply use them to reduce our grasping, to release the mind. So that is why Buddha is not going too much into, say, very atomic kind of explanation. Buddha is simply telling us, okay, this earth element is head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, skin, flesh. So this explanation gives a kind of a detachment to the body. Now, we are not trying to analyze the body or mind with the scientist's perspective. Now, scientists are going to the molecular or sort of subatomic particle level and trying to analyze it, but still their minds are so grasping. Still their minds are not released. They are fighting each other. But on the other hand, when a yogi is practicing according to the Buddha's teaching, so he becomes calm, his mind becomes less grasping, his mind becomes less lustful and less aversive and less deluded, because whole Buddha's teaching is oriented towards dispassion. So he once tell that his whole Dhamma is oriented in order to arouse dispassion towards the samsara. So therefore, we don't need to go to very subatomic level analysis here. So consciousness element, don't think that it is sort of a physical thing. And neither all the six elements, they all, we can say, are sort of transient experience. And it's a kind of a different view that Buddha is giving us, which is helpful for us to release our mind, helpful for us to arouse dispassion, helpful for us to reduce attachment, craving. So then then mind becomes free, then mind becomes clear, then mind becomes less entangled, less confused. So this is the kind of the practice where, I mean, that is where the practice is taking us. Yeah. Any other question?
Thank you, Bhante. And the second part to that question, previously Bhante mentioned that all four elements exist together. Does this also mean that all six elements coexist simultaneously as well?
So we can say, if we consider the living world, so we can say the six elements are incorporated. So they have some interconnections. Say, for example, the physical aspects have some impact on the mental aspect. Mental aspect have some impact on the physical aspect. So when that is possible, when we consider living phenomena. Now, if we consider, a table, a chair, so it doesn't have the mental component. So the physical components are there. But if we consider a table, a chair, the majority is earth element. But water element is also there. Fire element is also there. Air element is also there. So if we consider the purely the physical, we'll use the term physical in order to facilitate communication. So these physical components, therefore, is a kind of a combination. So we can't find out only a earth element, purely earth element, purely water element. Such is not possible. It's a sort of a combination, accumulation of four elements. And we can, if like, we can add a space element as well. And so therefore, some proportions are available. When the proportion of earth element is high, we simply tell, okay, this is earth element. When the proportion of water element is high, we say it is water element. Suppose you are drinking a tea, very good Ceylon tea. So see, at that time, the proportion of water element is high. So that's why it's the flowing nature is there. Suppose you are drinking a hot tea, then there the proportion of water element is also there, and again the proportion of heat element, fire element, is also high. So likewise, the proportions of these elements are changing. As a result, millions of combinations are possible.
Thank you, Bhante. The other question is, it appears that consciousness element is used primarily to understand Vedana Nupassana. Also, Chitta Nupassana is used for the same purpose. Consciousness element can be equated to simply knowing. Is this correct?
So, in this sutta, actually Buddha explains the task of consciousness with respect to feelings. I mean, understanding various feelings distinctly is one function of consciousness. Similarly, understanding differences between various forms is also a function of consciousness. Understanding distinctly various perceptions, also a function of consciousness. Understanding various formations is also a function of consciousness. So the consciousness is the one which is more responsible of distinct understanding, distinct recognition, vijanati. So distinctly the consciousness can recognize. When there are so many stuff, distinctly one can recognize. Each and everyone separately one can recognize as a result of the function of consciousness. So therefore, telling that only function is the recognition of feelings, it is not so. The consciousness is responsible for distinctly recognizing forms, feelings, perceptions, formations, etc. Now, when it comes to Chittanupassana, so therefore one clearly understands various thoughts arising and the various tastes of them and how they are arising, how they are changing, how they are passing away, etc. So that is also a function of, we can say, it also involves the consciousness, and it's also the skill of the consciousness, task of the consciousness.
Thank you, Bhante. I just want to check, Nirosha, did you have a question? You had your hand raised?
Yes, I had, I don't have much time, that's why I lower my hand. I have two questions, Bhante.
Yeah.
One is, you know, when it comes to Vedanta Pasana, or just or the present moment, even when we walk or something like that, if you do something, when we get those feelings, it doesn't, for an example, if we do the walking meditation, or if we just walk mindfully, it's not only the, you get the feeling, not only the, when the foot contacts the floor, the ground, but also when we see things as well. So is that what you said about the water bubble? Because these feelings is not from the earth element, but also when we see things, hear things, all these are feelings or vedana. If you look at the present moment, it's not just seeing, but it's also, it changes from one place to another. I cannot go to like exact precise present moment, but when you do mindful walking or anything by doing the thin slices of time, the present moment doesn't have any value. Any value. So is that what we call, it's like a water bubble?
No, actually the simile of water bubble fairly depicts the transient nature of the feelings. I mean, those feelings either can be aroused due to the sights, due to seeing, or due to hearing, or due to tasting. So any of those senses can stimulate either pleasurable, painful, or neutral feelings. So that is, and this simile is common to everywhere. It is not only to the body or to the other, but it is common. This picture is common to everywhere. If you suppose you are seeing something, so then suppose there is a pleasurable feeling arise. So if we are able to, look at that feeling carefully, then probably we can understand how quickly various kind of so many minute pleasurable feelings are arising and passing away. Now again, suppose you are hearing something. As a result, there is a neutral feeling arise. So those neutral feelings are also arising and passing away, like arising and bursting, like these water bubbles. Suppose you are tasting something. If at the tongue, if you closely look at it, the such kind of a picture may be possible. But the point is, I mean, taking eyes, ears, tongue could be difficult to understand this. But on the other hand, when one is sitting cross-legged and keeping a very careful attention and examining some bodily feeling, so to get this kind of understanding could be much easier practically. But the simile is common to all the type of feelings. It is not unique to the bodily feelings, but it is, so Buddha's simile is common to everywhere, to all feelings. The whole feeling aggregate, he is giving this simile.
Thank you.
And
can I ask the second question? Bhante, this is for Satipatthana as well. When we call emotions, those are the, is this, when we call emotions, is this the feeling that we get from these six senses, or is that the chetana, or the I don't know if the correct word is reacting, is that the word for chetana? My question is simply, the emotions are so-called vedana, or is that the chetana that we have?
Yeah.
So for example, if we see something, a surprise gift or something, we feel like we get some pleasant feeling. And if that, the, is this reaction is the emotion, or is this the sensation is the emotion, or the feeling is the emotion?
Yeah, I think the feelings are more into the fundamental level, to the basic level, and we, when we are not that mindful about that fundamental basic level feelings, they are now going to grow, and they are now stimulating certain mental aspects, and we maybe end up with emotions. Suppose you are getting, as you taken the example, suppose you are receiving a gift. So that that may be producing a pleasurable feeling in the mind, but we don't stop there. We don't recognize that pleasurable feeling as pleasurable feeling. Now we are attributing so many other conceptual things there. Suppose we are attributing, okay, so he is very good person. He has given me a birthday gift, and how nice he is. I love him. So likewise, now we are getting to a talk. We are now getting to a sort of a mental proliferation. So that is where the possibility of emotions going to arise. Now, if we could simply stop at the very early stages, then we become less emotional in a way. Yeah. So the feelings are very to the bottom line, to the very grassroots level, to the more into the primary level. And on top of that, once we put some additions, when we do some fabrications, then the emotions going to arise.
So it's not exactly the chetana.
Chetana.
The condition, right? So conditioning part.
Yeah, the chetana going to come and connect in between. Now, typically these feelings may arouse due to contact. Now, suppose you now see someone is approaching he's offering you a gift. So some part is there which is conditioned by the contact, and that is cause and effect. So there is no involvement of I there. There is no involvement of chetana, emotion, intention there. But on the other hand, once we receive it, now I am attributing, okay, I received that. She gave it to me, he gave it to me. Now you are taking it to the conceptual level, and now emotions going to arise, and now intentions also going to arise. Now you are telling, okay, are you also going to give him a present? Are you also have to praise him? Now the intentions going to arise.
Right.
Now actually, the previous part we can say is a kind of a cause and effect relationship. Now the second part, I am involved. That is where the intention going to connect. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bhante, would you have time for one last question?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. Could the word for vedana, or feelings of the earth element, also be explained with the word sensation?
Yes. So actually, when it comes to earth element, fire element, water element, air element, so those belong to the rupakhanda, the form aggregate. When it comes to pleasant feeling, neutral feeling, painful feeling, so those belongs to the feeling aggregate, vedanakhanda. Now they are fairly closely related. So therefore, sometimes it is difficult to distinguish. Now, recognizing any of these aspects are no problem. I mean, you don't need to sort of struggle to check whether this is the elements, or whether this is the feeling, because each kind of element characteristic may produce some kind of corresponding feeling. Say when you are walking. So there are various element characteristics, maybe hardness, softness, heat, coolness, different element characteristics are also there. But the overall, the feeling is neutral. So one can keep one's attention on this neutral feeling, or one can precisely try to recognize various element characteristics. Both are actually necessary. At the beginning, suppose you are being advised to clearly recognize these various element characteristics, because that helps, that develops clear comprehension in the mind, that develops the rupa kammatthana, the meditation advice or meditation instruction related to the body. But on the other hand, when one is practicing Vedananupassana, one's attention is given to the feeling tone, not to the element characteristics. So therefore, not necessary to see that earth element produces always painful feeling or pleasurable feeling, or all these different elements have their corresponding behavior, corresponding characteristics, and all of them also have their various feelings, and that can vary. Say for example, when you are touching your hand gently, it may produce a neutral feeling. But on the other hand, if we consider the element side, so it may be the earth element. But on the other hand, if you are hitting your hand, then it also the earth element, but may be producing painful feeling.
Thank you, Banjay. Looks like I just got another question.
Yeah.
Should we save it?
Sure, sure.
Oh, okay. I should continue? Okay. Can you kindly explain what you mean by water bubble? Sorry, I can't understand where this fits into the said element.
Yeah. Yeah. No, said element, it is not to a particular element. It is to all the feelings. Now, when it comes to the feelings, so feelings are so transient. Now, whenever a painful feeling arises, so we typically get the surface analysis and we consider it as a single painful feeling. But if we closely look at it, it's a so much of minute painful feelings. Now take yourself to a reservoir. Now assume there is a water drop, a rain drop hits the water surface. Then as a result, water bubble arises and then it bursts. Then another water drop falls. And as a result, water bubble arises and then it bursts. Now assume the rain now increases. Now so many raindrops are falling on the water surface. As a result, each and every raindrop is producing so much of, each and every raindrop is producing many water bubbles, and each and every water bubble arise and burst, arise and burst, arise and burst. Now if you apply that picture to these feelings, at the beginning you perceived it like a single pain, but when you are closely examining it, you may understand it's a accumulation of so many minute pains, so many little pains. So this each and every little pain arise and then burst, arise and then burst, arise and then burst. So this is how we can apply this simile to all the kinds of feelings, not only to painful feelings, even to the pleasurable feelings and even to the neutral feelings. So this simile is Buddha giving for us to understand the feeling aggregate. It is not for the form aggregate. It is not for the rupakhanda. It is not to the elements, but rather to the feelings. When we apply the simile to the feelings, then the grasping will reduce. Then we'll understand it is very much very transient, very vulnerable, non-governable. So then the understanding arises. Then the insights arise.
Thank you, Bhante. That is all of the questions for tonight.
Yep. Okay, then we'll wind up the session. Thank you very much for your attentive participation and very good questions. And I think we almost spend 1 and 15 minutes. So we'll meet again on next Wednesday on this Sutta teaching session. So thank you very much for participation. Theruvan Sarnai.